CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
The Duke's Mayo Bowl week begins. Gophers, Virginia Tech Friday in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Andy Greeter, St. Paul Pioneer Press, fantastic beat writer for Gopher football. Andy, I do want to talk about the Mayo Bowl, but what I'd first like to talk about is the transfer portal. Tell me a little bit of what you know about the wide receiver that the team picked up, because he seems like he has got some pretty good reputation coming in.
Which one? They've got three.
Yeah. Well, let's run the gamut on him, would you?
Sure. Yeah, I think probably the one you're referring to is Malachi Coleman, who was a four-star recruit out of Nebraska, played high school football in Nebraska as well, was with the Cornhuskers for 2 years. Had a pretty good taste his freshman year in 2023. Didn't play really at all in 2024, but certainly has the size and the pedigree as a recruit that could be an exciting outside receiver for the Gophers. Number two, I think, on that list, maybe the more proven college receiver is Javon Tracy from Miami of Ohio, who's a first-team All-Mid-American Conference performer for them. And then number three is Logan Loya, kind of a slot possession-type receiver out of UCLA. So the Gophers are losing Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer, two guys that are seniors that are at the end of their eligibility, and they really needed to find some proven production at that spot, and they've been able to do so with three different wide receivers. So it's going to be a nicer array to kind of complement the returning guys that need to kind of step up in their own right. But it was a need going into the offseason, and it's something that PJ Fleck and staff have certainly addressed.
Andy, what I'm so impressed with is just how well they've done in the portal. And people keep talking about the numbers and the three stars and all the rest of it. And I find it fascinating how well we are doing. What do you credit that to? And I look at the offensive line specifically, if you know anything about any of those players, but the kid from Washington and the kid from Central Florida, I just look at those guys and say, wow, how did we get them, and how did we convince them both to come to the University of Minnesota?
Yeah, so I think first off, what they've been able to do is win without defections, right? I think that's one of the biggest things. In the last 2 years, they've only lost one player each year that has been significant contributors or starters. So, without having players leave or get poached by other bigger programs, certainly sets yourself up to kind of go out and know what you have and address those needs. They've lost, I think, nine total players, but only one of those, Philip Daniels, the young right tackle who Ohio State came in and, kind of convinced the Cincinnati native to go home and play for the Buckeyes, is the only one that hurts the Gophers roster. The other eight guys were either older guys that weren't really going to be contributors or hadn't performed up until this point. So they're not really, you don't really bat an eye over losing those. They brought in what's now 14 different transfer portal kids. It was 15 until this morning. A running back, Cole Cabana from Michigan, has decided to kind of look elsewhere, and he's going to go to Western Michigan. It kind of looks, just looking from afar, that maybe an opportunity to play a little bit more. It was part of his reasoning to not come to Minnesota. But to answer your question, Pete, about the offensive linemen, when you lose Philip Daniels, who is going to be a starting offensive lineman for this team next year and probably the year after that, you needed to go out and add some tackle-type players. And Marcellus Marshall from UCF is one of those. Khalid Tafia from Washington is another tackle-type player. And then they got a player out of the SEC in Kentucky, and Dylan Ray. And all three of those guys, especially Marshall and Ray, are experienced guys. They've been around the block. They've played at the Power 4 level. Khalil Tafia is a younger guy who just got his taste at the end of the Husky season here in the Big Ten. But again, when you're losing Ariante Ursary, Tyler Cooper, Quinn Carroll already, and then you add Philip Daniels into that mix, it really became a position of need, and they addressed it. So they've done a nice job of seeing where their team was taking a step back when it came to seniors and people leaving in the transfer portal and have gone out and addressed it accordingly.
Andy Greeter joining us from the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Looking at PJ Fleck's record, he's undefeated in bowl games. I looked at these, and it can't just be that the teams that they always play are of lesser talent, right? I mean, once or twice I see it. But winning all five of your bowl games as a head coach, that takes more than that. What is it about what PJ does, how he runs things, that always seems to translate into success in these extra bowl games?
Yeah, it was kind of talked about yesterday during the press conference, is kind of the level of detail that they try to maintain. You know, this is a program that is usually one of the least penalized teams in the country. So they're usually in the right spot, doing the right thing, and doing it at a high level. And they try not to let that slip during bowl prep. You know, I think it can be an opportunity to let things slide, right? You can look at the schedule and be like, oh man, we got, you know, 3 weeks till our game. We don't have to practice that hard. We can mix in some trick plays. We can take it easy today. But PJ Fleck doesn't let that standard slip while still trying to mix in some fun and unique things. You know, I do think that the fact is that the Gophers have been playing in lesser bowl games in certain instances. You know, they've been to the Quick Claim Bowl a number of times. PJ's got two wins there. They get into the Guaranteed Rate Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl. So there's been a little bit of that it hasn't been the highest level of competition, but you can certainly throw in the former Outback Bowl against Auburn in that mix as well. So it's a little bit of both, but I think it's just kind of the standard that they set and a continuation of being a disciplined program.
Andy, is there any concerns at all about any of the coaches that somebody might want to take from us? I know that we already re-signed our defensive coordinator. You know, there's always talk every single year if there's any opportunities out there for a guy like PJ Fleck. But is there anybody out there that we'd be concerned about losing when it comes to the coaching staff?
Yeah, you know, Corey Heatherman, like you mentioned, was being targeted by Rutgers after Joe Harris-Simic, another former Gopher assistant, took the head coaching job at Massachusetts. But, you know, they re-signed him and gave him a substantial raise. Yeah, that's always a concern for any program as the coaching carousel heats up. You know, I think we saw yesterday that South Dakota State's head coach is going to Washington State. So there's always domino effects that come with those kinds of things. After the bowl season, I'm sure there'll be a number of movements with assistant coaches. There usually always is. You know, it's usually one or two assistant coaches leave. I think it's a challenge at Minnesota. There was news here earlier this month that the Gophers are last in the Big Ten when it comes to assistant coaches' salaries. So that's certainly a factor as other, you know, assistant coaches are being courted. Are they getting a raise? And if they're, you know, going to a Power Four level competition, then likely that's the case. So if they want to remain competitive and keep the coaches that they have, they need to increase the assistant coach's salary pool, and that falls on Mark Coyle's shoulders. So, you know, there's always going to be movement. It's just kind of one of those professions that there's always a churn out there. So some of that's natural, but some of that is induced by the fact that the Gophers don't pay as much for their assistants as their Big Ten competitors. Mm-hmm.
Andy, I'm reading, there's an NFL quote-unquote draft expert. I love draft experts because it's such a, you just never know. You know, they all have an opinion, right? So Jordan Reed from ESPN says Max Brosmer is his ninth best quarterback on his board and a day three pick. I'll forever feel like we got cheated and didn't get to have Max Brosmer for more because he's been such fun to watch this year.
Yeah.
Do you think he will be drafted? I mean, if he is, it's the first one in a very, very long time. I think 1972 is what the article quotes. But do you think he has a chance to be drafted? And if so, certainly he's not going to be a starter in the NFL, but maybe that he adapts to being a good backup?
I do. He's going to go to the East-West Shrine Bowl here in January, and obviously behind the Senior Bowl, the recent Senior Bowl, that's the number two college showcase for quarterbacks, for any, you know, type of player that's looking to go and play in the NFL. You know, I'm working on a big feature story on Max and Greg Harbaugh, and kind of looking at how complex the Gophers offense was this year. And it was startling to see how detailed it was. The level of preparation, the level of professionalism that Max showed. And Greg Harbaugh, the offensive coordinator, thinks that once he gets to the Shrine Bowl, and is able to kind of work with NFL assistant coaches. He's going to impress them in kind of his knowledge and understanding and ability to execute. I think he has shown himself to be pretty cerebral. I think he's shown himself to be a good enough athlete and a good enough decision maker. So I do think he has an NFL future. I do think it'll probably, you know, be late in the draft or maybe as a undrafted free agent, but he certainly has an opportunity. I think he's shown an ability to play at a higher level coming from the FCS to be productive and to be a quality player in the Big Ten. So I do think there's a future there. I wonder, obviously there's always such a premium at that position placed. So I think he could potentially sneak in late in day three, but I don't consider myself a draft expert. So I don't need to, you know, be in part of your ire, your sarcastic comment there.
You can be a draft fan. You know just as much as those guys, I'll tell you, if not more.
More.
I'd listen
more.
To you before I listen to them, Andy. That's just me.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think, like you said, I mean, he has been impressive, and I think it kind of goes to show, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, is that kind of less than meat on the bone, right? Given the fact that you've got an improvement in quarterback play and all the pieces that are leaving around him, you kind of wish that it was more than 7 wins.
Yeah.
And Andy, I had one last question, Dave. Sorry, just to jump in real quick.
Yeah.
Of the quarterbacks that we've seen at the University of Minnesota, but Matt, where do you rank Max in terms of maybe the last even 25 years? I mean, I don't remember seeing a guy throw the ball better than what I'd seen this past season since I've been back in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think probably he's the best. I've been covering the team for 10 years now. He's the best quarterback that I've seen. He's better than Tanner Morgan was during his great season in 2019. I think you probably have to go back to maybe an Adam Weber, who, you know, obviously had that talent and played in the NFL even though he wasn't drafted. He set a lot of records at Minnesota, a lot of career records. You know, he was kind of hamstrung by the fact that I think he had a different offensive coordinator each year that he was at Minnesota. Just goes to show that there's importance placed on assistant coaches, back to what we used to talk about. But yeah, I'd probably put him at number one, if not number two, behind Adam Weber.
Hmm. Andy Great. Greeter, thanks as always. Enjoy the warm weather and not having to go to Detroit.
Yeah, it's going to be my first time in Charlotte. The wife's coming on a trip, so
she's
got me booked for multiple dinners, so she's got me going all around town. So it'll be fun.
Enjoy the trip. Thanks as always for your contribution to our show. We appreciate it.
Thanks, happy holidays, guys.
All right, Andy Greeter joining us there, Pioneer Press. We'll take a quick break, come back. You are listening to The Huddle, 830 WCCO. A cat stretch fever. I get it.
that's epic.
Pete, how are you? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great, good. Man. I'm doing great.
How is the weather in Hawaii today?
It's pretty phenomenal.
Is it? We got a text in to the text line, the stylesfinish.com talk text line. Hey, Dave, it's not going to be much warmer in Charlotte than it is here. Heading down, I see lows are going to be in the 20s. Okay, maybe 30s, but still cold. Sorry, Andy Greeter. It might not be as warm as you'd hoped. Oh, brother.
That's always fun. It's a bowl game, man. You have fun in any bowl game. It doesn't matter the temperature or anything, man. It's awesome.
It is fun. It is. Timberwolves and the Spurs tonight, 7 p.m. I believe it's here. Should be a good matchup tonight. But there's a lot of talk this week. I keep hearing about, oh, boy, the Timberwolves, they lost the trade. Cat's been playing well in New York. Julius Randle and DiVincenzo aren't as good here. I feel like this is common. This should not be a really radical take, but how are we grading this trade already? Like, I mean, and I don't mean like how, but I think it's too early to grade this at this point. Just because I honestly, you know, Cat's been good, but I still think there's got to be more time.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I do say, as we watch Cat and what the New York Knicks are able to do, though, I think that certainly they're feeling pretty good about the trade, I think, right now. And I think that
they probably are.
What a 7-foot guy who not only – and it's doing – he's doing something that I don't remember him doing as well with rebounding as he is now. I mean, he's doing an outstanding job. He leads the NBA in rebounds. So – and he's always been a great scorer. We know that, but a 7-foot guy who can shoot 3-pointers, is always an amazing piece to have to your team. And it seems like he's just thriving pretty well. That doesn't mean that, this trade is a bust for the Timberwolves, though. I don't think. I'm with you, Dave. I mean, we'd like to see this all kind of play out, but it's still early, I think, from the Timberwolves' perspective. They get a couple of players, and DiVincenzo has not really competed as well as we'd probably like, but it's still really, really early. But I think it's one thing that you look at our team. I still think that what I don't understand, Dave, and I don't pretend to be the biggest basketball guy in the world. I played basketball through high school and all the rest of it, watched a heck of a lot of it, the Gophers and the Timberwolves, but I don't pretend to be an expert. But why don't they get the ball to Rudy more? I've just not understood this. You've got a 7 foot guy, plus 7 foot plus, who is pretty amazing around the bucket, not just rebounding, not just defensive rebounding, but if he's close enough, which he oftentimes is, in the paint, why doesn't he get the ball even a little bit more? Because when you look at him and you look at his stats and you say, well, let's see, this guy's got one of the best, you know, field goal percentage of anybody. Well, your argument back would be, yeah, but he's really close. Okay, get him the ball when he's close. I mean, I don't find that to be as complicated as others. And, you know, I gotta have a shout out to my guy once again, Naz Reid. He continues to play well. You love teasing me about it, but I swear to you, every time I look at him, I'm like, there's Naz Reid.
That was a big question that we talked about last year, which is Naz is great when he comes in short bursts, but give him more time in there. Are people going to be able to figure him out? He's getting about 24 minutes per game, which is, I think, a little bit up from last year. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's a little bit up, and he's still succeeding. But you're right. If you look at field goal percentage, Rudy Gobert, I mean, he's blowing everyone away. He's shooting 64% from the floor. You know, the next closest, I think, is Luke Garza, who, you know, Luka Garza, who doesn't play, so he doesn't count. In the starting group, though, I mean, the closest to him is Julius Randle, who's averaging 20 points, you know, second on the team in the game per this season. So I don't know why. That's a great point, and I agree with you. I don't know how you don't get the ball inside to Rudy. Maybe it's just, you know, usually it's because there's a team's going to scheme for him and say, okay, you're going to have to beat us with somebody else because we're going to take him away. Maybe that's it. Mm-hmm. But he's making the most of his opportunities, to your point. And this, they have to turn it around a little bit. Again, they still have to try to figure out how all the pieces of the puzzle work. But I do believe it. I believe it's going to be there, and I do think that it's going to take some time. But this will be a good test tonight against the Spurs. Spurs pretty close in record. I think they have one more win, if I'm remembering correctly. But, so it should be a good game. We still have a lot of basketball left to be played. So I'm just not ready, not even to say that the Knicks won or the Wolves lost. I'm just not there to even make a decision yet on this.
And I don't think we have to. I think the way we have to look at it is, you know, there was the cap was a complicated thing because of salary as well. So there was a lot of pieces to that whole thing. And it's okay that he's doing as well as he's doing where he is. I think that now we have to adjust a little bit more. And I don't know if that's on the coach or how that really works with the Timberwolves. Obviously, Anthony Edwards is going to want his shooting as well. I mean, and I love that kid. I think the world of him. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to try to get the ball inside every once in a while to Cat or to Rudy rather, because he's a big guy who gives you a lot of different answers. And, you know, when they do that catching back and forth kind of a thing and opens up an outside shot for a guy like, you know, any of the outside shooters, that gives us something even better. So get the ball into Rudy once in a while. I think that really would change things about how people would have to approach the Timberwolves.
Wolves and Spurs tonight. Spurs are 16-15. Wolves are 16-14. It is a 7 o'clock tip tonight at Target Center. We'll take a quick break, come back, talk about the other winter sport, hockey, and your Minnesota Wild. Wes Walls joins us around the corner to talk Wild hockey next. Your Minnesota Wild host, the Ottawa Senators, tonight. Could be without Kirill Kaprizov. Wes Walls joining us from FanDuel Sports Network. Wes, I know Kirill didn't practice yesterday. What do you know of this lower body injury and possibly how long he's going to be out of the lineup?
Well, I mean, he's been in hiding. No one's really seen much of him at all. Obviously, he wasn't on the plane when we headed out to Dallas. So, just going off of reports that what everybody else is reading is that it doesn't, Billy Guerin had some quotes, it doesn't appears to be too serious. Sounds like he got nicked up at the last half of the Chicago game, from what I understand. It's a lower body injury, and from what I understand, it's not overly serious, and there's a chance that he will probably play maybe one of the next couple, two games. Who knows? I mean, we're in a situation right now, David, where we're at in the standings. We don't need to try to fit guys in if guys are playing it. You know, we don't need guys playing at 90%, especially Kirill Kaprizov. You know, even if we can win this game here tonight, who knows? Maybe he gets the next game off. You know, that's kind of, we're in a situation like that right now. But obviously having him out of the lineup is not ideal. And, you know, he can't wait to get back in there.
Wes, just looking at sheer numbers, and you look at a team that they've lost six of the last 10. In that six that they've lost, they've only scored a total of six goals. What is it that's stopping us, and what is it about our offensive play that has slowed down just a little bit? I know we started off strong, but it looks like we've slowed down pretty fast in terms of the scoring.
Yeah, you know, especially in that stretch there where we had lost six of eight. The scoring was obviously way down. We had not. I don't think we had a goal from a defenseman in like any of those eight games. We lost six out of eight, so we were not getting any help from the back end at all. And obviously, guys like Johansson and Boldy and Goudreau and Hartman, you know, guys, secondary scoring guys that you expect to step up and score when you know, some of the top guys aren't scoring. Just, you know, it pretty much dried up. But and listen, you're going to go through that throughout the course of seasons where you're going to have a tough time to score. Every team will go through it at some point during the season. We happen to go through a stretch there where we had a difficult time scoring. But the overall game, guys, for me, like, I, you know, when you walk the streets, you're walking around grocery stores, you have people coming out like, what's wrong? I'm telling you, nothing's wrong. Like, I haven't watched the Wild games and said, like, this team is broken. That never even come into my head. No. Once. I thought when the Wild played Winnipeg here at home, we lost 4-1 to them. I thought we were the better team, probably shouldn't deserve to win that game. We played a Utah team, lost 2-1. We got goalied in that game. Should have probably won that game by four goals. Gave up a goal late to Vegas at home and lost that game 3-2. And I was talking to one of the assistant coaches. They had the chances at 15-10 for us, grade A chances. So no problem with how we were playing. And actually, I think the Wild, to be perfectly honest with you, need to be commended for how they're playing defensively, yeah, even though they're not scoring. Yeah. Because I'm telling you, when you're not scoring as a team, it can get away from you really, really quick. You start getting yourself out of games real fast. Coach John Hines and the players in that locker room deserve a lot of credit.
Wes Walls joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Wes, you and I were chatting, we were texting the other night as Brock Faber scores this game winner, and I'm continually in awe of how impressive this young man is, and just a few years into the league. To me, he's one of the best in the game. From what you see of him, one, what makes him so good at such a young age? And two, I can't remember a Wild defenseman, maybe Brent Burns, who have the full complete game like Faber does. Where does he rank to you, albeit a small sample size, just a couple of years in franchise history?
Well, Brent Burns didn't have his game when he didn't have Brock Faber's game when he played in a Wild uniform. He kind of got that big that big bruising defenseman, defensive defenseman, like after he left the Minnesota Wild. I think the one thing that stands out to me with Brock, I mean, obviously you can see his skating. He's very twitchy. So he's got quick twitch muscle, which is huge. But most guys that have quick twitch are 70, 180 pounds, not guys that are 210. And for him to be as twitchy as he is in his own zone, and then to be able to use that twitch to get position on guys, and then be able to kind of bowl his way, bowl pucks away from guys defensively, is just, it's amazing to watch. He doesn't play like a 200-pound player. He's got a tremendous amount of hockey strength to him that most people can't see. He's competitive as heck, David. That's the other thing. I mean, he's just he you can tell he hates to lose. And, you know, with having Kirill out of the lineup and Erik Cenac out of the lineup in the last couple games, he needed to step up and play well. And before the break, I thought his game was kind of sliding, to be perfectly honest with you, especially defensively. But the game out of the break in Dallas, not the fact that he scored in overtime, I thought defensively he was an absolute horse against some of the best players in the world. And yeah, he's an unbelievable player. And like, I think his competitiveness is what separates him from most players.
Hey, Wes, how is the overall health of the team right now? I know you mentioned the lower body for Kaprizov and some of that, but are we generally pretty healthy right now, or where do we stand?
Yeah, I mean, other than Kirill being banged up, I know Marcus Johansson, the last couple opportunities the team has had to practice, has not practices, and that could be, like, when you start to get, when you're 33, 34, 35, like, you get, the bumps and bruises affect you a little more than when you're 22, 23, 24. So you take those days. I'm sure he could have probably practiced. I know later in my career when I was a little banged up and stuff, the coaches had no problem with me taking the odd day off so you can pick up an extra few percentage points of your body feeling better. So I think Kirill is really the only guy. Obviously, we've got Lauko is still out. He hasn't skated, which is a little bit concerning. I didn't think that he was going to be this far away. He hasn't skated, I don't think, in like 10 days or so. And obviously, Jake Middleton, everybody saw the play, went to block a shot with his hand. So obviously, we think he's dealing with a broken bone in his hand or his finger or something. Mm. Haven't seen him in a long time. So anytime you see broken bones, you're always 4 to 6. That's just the world you live in. And I believe he's around 3 weeks. Jake Middleton, maybe 2.5. So those days are starting to pile up. But we've had to deal with a lot of injuries. I mean, we just really have. And it's been, I look at the team we're playing Washington in a couple of days. Ovechkin's back in the lineup now. He's the only guy that's been out of their lineup. We played the Winnipeg Jets a couple times in the last month. They don't have a guy in their top 13 scorers that's missed more than one game. So it seems like we've been bitten by the injury bug quite a bit here over the last couple of years. And obviously, when everybody was healthy and in the lineup, you saw the kind of start we got off to. And when we got all our players in and we're healthy, we're a formidable force. But other than the guys that are out right now, guys, I think everybody else is in pretty good shape.
Wes, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this yet, so I'll ask you here on the air. Looking into February, not having that All-Star game, but having the Four Nations Cup instead, what's your thought on that? Do you like this? I mean, do you like the idea of having this as opposed to an All-Star game? Obviously, it's 8 days of not playing, but that's kind of similar to an All-Star break. So where are you on this? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you have to wait and see what it looks like before you make a before you make an opinion?
Well, yeah. I mean, the All-Star game is obviously a big deal for the National Hockey League. I could personally do without it. Like, I don't know if I've watched an All-Star game in the last, like, 10 years, to be perfectly honest with you. Yeah. But the actual Four Nations event, I'm going to be watching very closely. Like, I'm really intrigued to see what this looks like. The only thing that stinks, guys, is, like, not having Russia there, not having Chechnya, like, the top teams, too. You know, it almost feels like a precursor, like a warm up for the Olympics that's going to happen in a couple of years. I'm sure the top players in the world, they all play so much every night. I'm sure they're looking at this right now and saying, "Oh my gosh, I got to go fight like a dog for my country." I know everybody wants to wear their colors. There's no question about it. But you get into such a routine as an NHL player, and I'm telling you, once the puck drops between those four teams, it's going to be an unbelievable hockey to watch. And I got to tell you, if I was an owner in the National Hockey League, I would be watching these games very closely, and I would be very nervous because there's going to be some intense hockey in a short period of time, and there's going to be some guys that are going to get hurt. And I don't want anyone to get hurt, and I don't want anyone to get soft tissue groin issues where they miss a month. But I'm telling you, there are going to be a couple teams that are going to have to deal with it. And that's the part of it that I don't really love. But as far as being a fan, Dave, I'm really looking forward to watching these four plays teams get after each other. It's going to be really, really exciting. And then for the guys that are not playing in this Four Nations, like, I could not even imagine in the middle of a season when you're grinding and trying to make the playoffs, having like 13 days off. Like,
yeah,
as a player that's not playing, really difficult to just, yes, you can shut your mind up, but to be able to rev it up again when everybody gets back, it's going to be a little tricky for sure. So I'm interested to see, you know, what kind of hockey we're looking at too when teams come back from the Four Nations.
I agree with you. I have not watched the All-Star game the last couple of years. I am excited for the Four Nations, but I agree. You don't want to. Wasn't it John Tavares who played for Canada and got hurt a couple of years ago pretty badly?
Yeah, there was somebody. Yeah, it almost feels like there's every year somebody, you know, someone goes down. And I know the tournament's only 10 days long, but just the intensity of the games and how hard guys are going to be playing, it's going to happen. You just hope it's not too serious.
Wes Walls, thanks as always, buddy. Good to chat with you.
Thanks, Wes. Yeah, boys. Anytime, guys.
All right, take care. Wes Walls, big game tonight for the Wild, hosting the Ottawa Senators. We'll take a quick break. Come back. We'll wrap up hour number two. You're listening to The Huddle, 830 WCC. Here we go. Final week, final show of 2024.
Mm.
New Year's resolutions time. Okay, so here's the only rules. It's rules. You can make whatever rules you want. But I want one sports New Year's resolution and one just regular New Year's resolution. Okay, one of each. You get a sports and a New Year's. And Josh, you cannot say, I want to go to Hawaii with Pete this year. That is not a resolution.
How do you know I'm already there?
That is a wish. That is a wish. I'll go first.
Yeah.
My sports resolution this year, and I've teased it a little bit, but my sports resolution this year is to believe in the Vikings. I'm doing it. Mm. I'm doing it. I'm all in. I'm jumping in with both feet. I believe in the Vikings. I don't know if it's Super Bowl year, but I believe in this team. So my resolution is to no longer doubt that Sam Darnold is the real thing and that the Vikings are legit. They are legit. He is the real deal. Unless they go out and lose by two touchdowns to Green Bay today, then I retract my resolution.
You pull back the whole thing.
Pete, do you have a sports resolution for the year?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I like where you're going with the Vikings. I'd actually say my resolution would be for the Gophers to, I think I underestimated how good I actually think we ended up being this year. Now, we weren't 8-4, we were 7-5, but nonetheless, I think my resolution is that I need to go even higher for what I think and what I've seen and all the coaching and all the players. And this opening up of the portal that has happened has been absolutely incredible, Dave. I mean, I look at the players that we are picking up, and I know we talked about this earlier in the show or whatever, but we're getting high-level recruits that want to come here. And it's not because of NIL, because I don't think we can even compete with NIL, but I think there's something that we are doing that's right, that is getting the right players here. Obviously, quarterback's going to be a big deal because that's a huge hole, and somebody's going to have to fill that. But we might even have a couple of those guys already on campus as we speak. So I'm really, really excited for that, and I don't want to underestimate anymore. I think this is a ball club that could be something pretty special in 2025.
I agree with you, actually. I think I said it. I was on with Jason on Monday, and I said that I thought the Gopher football team has a chance at contending for a Big Ten title. I don't think they'll win it next year. But when you look at their schedule and some of the teams that they have the potential to knock off, Oregon's on the schedule next year. I think Ohio State's on the schedule next year, I think. I might be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. I know Oregon is. Josh, do you have a sports New Year's resolution this year?
My New Year's resolution is to end Minnesota's title pain, whether it's the Wild, the Vikings, the the Frost, because the Frost are the defending champs.
Yes.
The United, shout out to Andy Greeter also on that one. Yeah. Well, let's be honest, the Wolves may not do anything this year. We'll see.
Twins?
I don't know about the Twins. Who are they?
Exactly.
No, I'm my New Year's resolution for 2025 is for the title drought. Notice how I didn't say Gophers because I'm not a homer like Pete. The title drought needs to end. The pain needs to stop for Minnesota sports fans. And I think 2025 will be the year.
All right.
I love it. I like that.
Do you have any other resolutions? Any non-sports resolutions? Everyone likes to make resolutions. Some people hate them. Some people hate New Year's resolutions. Do you have any?
I want a six-pack of abs like Pete and an incredible head of hair like Dave Schwartz.
You have a better chance of a six-pack of beer.
I mean, it's anything's possible. I mean, we've learned that. Yeah. My favorite quarterback went to the playoffs with two different teams. There you go. Anything's possible.
Baker Mayfield. Yeah. Do you have a resolution, Pete?
You know, I do every year, Dave, and it's always the same one. Just try to hold back age as much as you can by getting in there and making sure that you get there each and every day. So as long as I can stick to that one, I feel a heck of a lot better because it does make me feel better throughout the year. So but I have to do it.
You got to fight. You have to defeat aging, as the Twins pitcher Kenta Maeda once said. I will defeat aging. He didn't, but I like the sentiment. My resolution this year is to, as I will turn 46 in February. My resolution this year is to live in the moment more and to enjoy the now, not look too far ahead, not look back, but just enjoy where your feet are at that moment. That's one that I've thought about a lot, and it actually does apply to sports too, just to live in the now. Whatever happens with the Vikings this year, just enjoy the season. It's a season that nobody thought was coming. Nobody thought Sam Darnold was going to be anything. And here we are now with the idea that they don't know what they're going to do next year. Are they going to sign a franchise quarterback or go to the highly touted rookie? But my resolution is to live in the now. Live in the moment. Enjoy every day. And just be there. And that's okay. And I'm looking forward to that. So.
That's the perfect resolution. I like that.
Well, thanks, buddy. Yeah. I'm going to live in the now with us. And every Sunday morning from 10 to noon is always fun with you guys. Appreciate you as always. And we'll see you next week, okay?
Yep. Sounds great. See you guys.
All right. Happy New Year, everyone.